the A to Z of growing any business is you have to find your brand's unique product market fit with demographic, with the correct content on Meta. If brands don't spend the time early figuring out what's going to fly on Meta, there's a case to be made that you're actually not going to fly very easily.
It's the E-Commerce Master Plan Podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. Me and the team get so much joy when we see our listeners raving about us on social, in lists, on blogs, that it's only fair to repay that by giving you a little shout out on the episode itself. So, huge thanks to Arvind Budai, I hope I pronounced that right, who dropped me a LinkedIn DM to say he's a fan of the podcast and he is a head of home and garden at Fargrow Limited. So Arvind, I hope this hasn't caused you to fall over a dog or hit something with your car. Not too much of a shock, I hope, but really awesome. Thanks for getting in contact with your thoughts about the show and for listening. Great to have you out there. So this is just an awesome episode. Okay. I am still buzzing off recording and listening to this particular guest. We are going to be exploring how and why my guest chose to buy the D2C brand she bought. We're going to be talking about how she grew it to what's now on track for $3 million this year. She will be sharing what that's taken in terms of her focus. She'll be revealing the team that got her there. Prepare to be shocked when you hear that bit. And she will be taking us through the product development they did as well. I mean, it is a masterclass in growing a brand. I'm a little bit in awe of her, thoroughly enjoyed chatting to her. And then when we get to the top tips, she's sharing some absolutely awesome stuff, especially around her tool top tip is one we can all learn for, super clever hack. And her carbon top tip is something we should all be doing too. Anyway, before I start repeating the entire episode, which I am close to doing right now, let's get on with it. Make sure you listen to the end, though, so you don't miss out on any of the brilliant advice this guest shares with you. Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organize the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook. And now to introduce our special guest. Jamie Villela is the managing director and owner at Cookie Haircare, a D2C solid shampoo bar brand selling via their Shopify store and wholesale. Founded in 2020, they grew 10x in 2024 from $170,000 to $1.1 million. And they are now on track to make 2025 their first $3 million year. Hello, Jamie.
Hello, Chloe. Lovely to be with you.
Thank you so much for sparing the time to do this, because with those growth numbers, I'm guessing you're a little bit busy.
Always a pleasure.
How did you get started in e-commerce? What led you to this world?
I had a funny entry point in. I actually started in sort of journalism, working at magazines as my first jobs in advertising. And then, like every sort of good journalist in the mid-2010s, fell into content marketing. And because that was so the way the world was going. And then from there fell into sort of full funnel marketing, head of marketing roles. And I had sort of a point where I was a senior marketing manager for Westfield, which is obviously in the UK as well, and was managing their digital team of about 12 people and, you know, campaigns and all these things. But I realized that I really wanted to learn e-com because I wanted to have a brand of my own one day. And so I made quite an intentional call at that point to leave that job and go and get my first head of marketing role at a startup. So I did that. And then I worked basically for a number of startups as a head of marketing for a few years and what I sort of call my sort of mini MBA in e-com until I got to the point where we purchased Cookie Hacker and I jumped out and started doing that full time.
So a very conscious decision to go, I want to do something cool in e-commerce. Let's find some jobs to learn the role, the growth strategy and all the rest of it as you went through.
Absolutely. Because I guess obviously at Westfield, there's not the opportunity to see direct sales. You're sort of a house of brands for other brands, but you don't get to track that data. And so I got to go and learn from some really incredible founders for a few years and really set me up to go out on my own, which was great.
I think that's so clever, partly because it's what I have failed to do. If there's one thing I have failed in my career, it's doing the job before actually starting a business in that arena. So I take my hat off to you for that kind of foresight. Very, very cool. So Jamie, Cookie Haircare, tell us a bit about it and what it is like now, and then we'll find out a bit about why you bought it and how you've grown it. So what does it look like today?
So I don't know about you and if you've ever tried a solid shampoo bar before, but traditionally they don't foam up. And so Cookie is a brand of ultra foaming solid shampoos. So the idea being that, you know, your bottle of shampoo is 80% water. If you were to take the water out, a solid shampoo bar is what's left and you just add your own water at home rather than paying to transport it around the globe. So we sell a range of solid shampoo and conditioner bars and sustainable accessories like wooden drainer dishes and loofahs and things like that. And we have a sort of thriving e-com brand where we've grown really quickly there. And we are also in a number of health food stores as well.
It's kind of mad that even when we're creating a product that's eco-friendly, that clearly a good idea to go for the, you know, I'll add the water at home rather than adding the water in the factory. But yet we still as consumers respond better to one that feels like normal. You know, it's got some foam going on, even though it works just as well as the ones without foam. That mental leap is less tough when it does what we're used to shampoo doing.
I couldn't agree more. And I think poor shampoo bars of, you know, 20 years ago got a really bad rap because they just didn't foam up and it was so unrewarding. And I have an oily scalp, so you can't give me what's called baby foam and have it do anything at all. So when I first tried our bars, I thought this is exactly like my fancy liquid shampoo, to the point now where I've got a huge range of hairdressers that stock our brands and salons, which is really fun. And so I think the key with any product success is you've got to minimize the behavior change to do it, because as much as the purists among us would love to think that a customer is going to change their behavior of many, many decades just for eco reasons or just for, you know, simple travel bar reasons, they're not going to. And it's got to be that the product is as good or better than what they were using before. So I think what I love most about Cookie actually as a product is that it makes a behavior change to sort of an eco and natural ingredient stance so seamless that you don't really have to even notice you've done it, because the product works well and your hair feels just as good. Versus I think a lot of natural brands, you have to compromise on quality or efficacy. And we're really passionate about making something where you don't have to do that.
I think just to tangent us for a moment here, I think that's where we've got to in the sustainability play, certainly here in the UK, is that sustainability is no longer a USP. You can't just go, oh, it's the eco option, come buy me. You have to be equally as good as everybody else. And then the sustainability kind of becomes table stakes. So you've got to be more than just feel good and green for buying our product.
I could not agree more with that. And I, you know, people often ask me, oh, Jamie, why don't you lead with the eco stance? I've had friends ask me that. And I said, because I just think that's the minimum a brand should be doing in 2025. And I don't think that's something to really brag about. Plastic-free is actually the bottom of our messaging hierarchy. I was telling a new team member just this week. And I said, you know, first is ultra foaming. It works. Second is natural ingredients, chemical-free, better for you. You know, I have endometriosis stage 4 and had to go low-tox and clean up my beauty cabinet. I can use these bars. If you have psoriasis, you can use these bars. If you're pregnant, you can use these bars. But that's really important. On the bottom rung is plastic-free. And maybe even above that would be great for travel. So it's really not something I hero in our hierarchy of messaging, but it's obviously so exciting for me to know that, you know, there's just tens and thousands fewer plastic bottles floating around because people are switching to bars. And I think, you know, I always say, I don't care if you try my bars, just go buy any bar, start with it for travel, and then you'll get hooked. And then you've already done your bit for the planet for the year.
I'm glad we're of a mind there. Cool. Thank you so much for that, Jamie. Now, the business was founded in 2020. You bought it off the original founder. So when did you come to buy Cookie Hair Care and why did you choose to buy it?
It's a really funny story. I was actually copy editing the print version of In Style Australia, which is an awesome fashion mag that I've read for many years. And I was freelancing at that point and contracting to a couple of different businesses. And they hurled me a, you know, sustainable swaps article to edit. And so it had, you know, in 2023, we're swapping, I think it was, you know, linen for bamboo and we're swapping bottles for bars was one of them. And I had, hand on heart, never seen or heard of a shampoo bar in my life, which is so funny because now I go down a supermarket aisle and there's lots there. Somehow had completely bypassed me as someone who's even worked in magazines for years. Hilarious. And so I'm editing this article, learning a lot and seeing, you know, Loewe has done soap on a rope and there's all these really cool indie shampoo bar brands. And I thought, oh, that's a cool concept. And then fast forward a few months down the track and my husband and I, you know, I always say that if you were to throw a few people into a startup accelerator, he and I have such complementary skills that it would be a no-brainer to pair us to found a business. So he is operations, finance, strategy in terms of business strategy. So he's the head of strategy for Australia's largest e-commerce brand. And then I'm sort of brand marketing, new product development, customer. And we've always said, oh, wouldn't it be great to do something together? But at the time, I was working as a head of marketing for a rapidly scaling beauty brand. And I just knew that there wasn't any chance of me being able to go 0 to 1 in my own time. And so he said, well, why don't we just spend this year looking for a little brand to buy? And, you know, I'd intentionally started working 4 days a week because I wanted to spend 1 day a week figuring out what that entrepreneurial or consulting thing was for me. And so basically with that, by the end of the year, it had gotten to a point where we'd bought the brand in 2023 and it was very new and we just started growing it. But I said, I think I'm going to jump out of my full-time job and go all in on Cookie. And so we did.
Very cool. And what gave you that confidence to go on all in? To go from four days and one to just, yeah, I'm in. What led you to make that call?
We had early signs of really great growth and I knew I was about to do a full rebrand. And so I'd sort of said to myself, well, look, I've got a lot of consulting kind of clients on the side that I can draw on. And, you know, my plan was to try and be full-time on Cookie for the first few months of 2024, which I managed to do. And I didn't start consulting again until the April. But that really gave me the headspace to do the rebrand because I think it's quite difficult to tackle something like that with a part-time focus. So yeah, I guess in answer to your question, it was early wins, the realization that I had to just dive in and bet on myself because otherwise it would just be really easy to stay hanging out working for others forever. And I think the founder of Cookie had done such an incredible job at setting up this awesome base of customer and product that I could build on. And I just knew we were onto a winner. I just was like, even though we hadn't grown very much in that couple of months, I was like, I know that we could grow. So it was a crazy punt. And, you know, my husband, who's ever supportive, just said, hey, you know, so what if within a few months it's not working, you get another job, you go consulting, what's the worst that can happen? So I'm very lucky that I had him fully supporting that choice too.
You mentioned that you did a full rebrand that early on. Was that something, I think that's a bold choice. I think most people would go, let's hammer the Facebook ads or let's hammer the route to market and build the sales. But no, we'll ignore that for a bit and we'll just properly get into the nitty gritty of this and do the rebrand. Was that something you decided needed happening before you bought it during, like, you know, the due diligence phase? Or was that something which a couple of months in you read the writing on the wall and went, oh, we've got something that's going to hold us back if we don't fix it?
No, I knew at due diligence phase and I said to Lucas, my husband, I said, oh, look, I think what I love is that the product is great. There's an existing base of customers that really love the brand. Back when we bought the brand, it was doing about 4 to 5 sales a day. And, you know, I knew that the product was good and there was scope to really expand to other demographics as well with the right branding. But, you know, the founder had done it, you know, from her living room and had done an amazing job to the point it got to. But I could really see that in order to scale, it needed to be sort of refined. So my philosophy with brand is very much in the eco space about making things colorful and fun and vibrant. So less of a focus on sort of the seriousness of eco and the sort of sage neutral vibe, which is, I guess, where the brand was when I got it. There was still a lot of fun in the brand. I like that, you know, a pillar of cookie the whole time has been fun. Like our brand platform now is good, clean fun. And I wanted to just go full color with the packaging and have different scents because there were all these different scents and they all had the same green box, which was quite confusing for the customers. So I decided to just go very colorful. But I've done rebrands for other brands before. So I've done, you know, full rebrands or, you know, what I call a brand refresh. So I guess to an extent, Cookie was a brand refresh, but it was such an extreme change that I'd probably put it in the rebrand territory. But my existing customers just absolutely loved it. So I didn't alienate them, which was my plan. But I mean, I could spend the whole pod just talking about how I approached that rebrand because it was a fascinating one. But I think, you know, first of all, I did a lot of focus groups, which is something, you know, I've done as a consultant in the past and I'm really passionate about. So got different groups of women of different ages, some who loved Buzz, some who had never used one, some who only bought natural products, some who only shopped at our most chic department stores, beauty counters, and just heard different issues, acne, menopause, and really narrowed down where does this product fit and who can this product serve. And then I really just sort of tripled down on a brand that I felt could, you know, stay true to the essence of Cookie for the customers that loved it, because there was still quite a few customers that we inherited, but also open us up to a new niche. And it's worked really well. It's grown really quickly.
So definitely the right thing to do to go, right, we are fixing this before we get any bigger.
Yeah, I mean, I scaled us from 4 sales a day to about 20 sales a day on the old brand before rebranding. It might have been more, it might have been 40. I'd need to check my numbers. It was 40. We got from 4 sales to 40 with the old brand, but it really was once we rebranded, within 6 months, we were doing 140, 150 sales a day. And I think that really is down to that look and feel and that polish too.
Did you change the name?
Only slightly. So when I bought the brand, it was called Hair Cookie. And I decided to flip that to Cookie Hair Care. And I had toyed with completely renaming it, but we had some quite lovely SEO value in Cookie Without an E. And people tell me that they remember Cookie Without an E. And when you look at the bars, the hilarious dessert-themed name makes a lot of sense because they actually look like macarons. So I thought, you know what? That's a fun platform. There's other dessert-themed brands out there that's actually having a real moment at the moment. I'll just go with that. And yeah, it worked out well.
So step one to achieving the great growth was getting that branding done. And then what have you done since then to do it? Was it a Meta ads play? Was it an email play, a community play? How much of your secret sauce are you willing to share?
All of it. Always open book. So I would say number one, Meta ads. And I have a whole, you know, TED talk about Meta ads and how to use them. Number two, email marketing. And number three, customer service. And really going the extra mile and building really deep relationships with my customers and having a VIP Facebook group and that part of it. So how we scaled from 4 sales to 40 quite quickly was with targeted UGC ads that looked like the customer. So back then, I actually went for someone in their 30s. The customer I inherited with Cookie was actually in her 50s and 60s, which was really interesting. But when you think about it, on balance, if we think of our grandmothers and great-grandmothers, they are across soap.
Yes.
They know how soap works. It's not a foreign concept. And we only came up with plastic bottles in, you know, the 70s, so, or whatever it was. So they have just really loved this concept and they loved the fun name and just went for it. And so because I had an existing base of people of that, you know, demo, I decided to do these sort of ads that really would appeal to that demographic. So didn't go for anything Gen Z or even millennial. And then once we did the rebrand, I noticed that there was so much just sort of incredible brand love with this demographic that I made the call to abandon my original plan with the rebrand, which was to grow the 50s and 60s demo, but also carve out a new segment of 35 to 50, which is people who are often having kids for the first time. They're thinking about what they're putting on their face and then on their body and on their kids. So I think it's really only after 35 that that natural thing happens to you in terms of cleaning out the beauty cabinet. I always joke, you know, like in your 20s, you're just doing tequila shots at the table and you don't care about what you're really drinking or putting on your face cream and spraying Lynx in the train. So, but I think there's this amazing segment of women that are already using other brands like mine who are using natural shampoo and would find us. But I didn't have time to focus on them because we blew up with this 50s and 60s crowd. It's actually more sort of 40s to 60s, I would say, who just loved us. So I just tripled down on what I call my gray hair UGC. And we have this whole movement around going gray and loving it. And, you know, I think about types like Jane Fonda and Andy McDowell, who've really pioneered just going gray and embracing it. And it's just been this really incredible dive into that sort of perimenopause, menopause phase where women's hair is thinning and changing and going curly and, you know, the hormones do crazy things to hair. And so people are really looking for specific hair concerns to solve. And so our bars, you know, they have incredibly potent ingredients for things like hair thinning, hair growth. So we just really captured this insane growth wave and I decided to ride that wave. This year, I'm focusing more on that other demo, but I think for now I've really found resonance. And when you find resonance, you've got to stay there and ride it as far as you can.
So was the growth purely down to the marketing and the targeting, or was there an element of product fit that went on? Because I think that's one of the things which is coming to the fore at the moment in e-commerce is like, well, if the product's shit, we can't do anything anyway. So you mentioned about, you know, the product being tailored to that audience. Was it already tailored to them, or did you do range expansion to make sure you could solve all their problems as you were learning about them?
I love that question. So when we inherited the range, the shampoo bars, many of them we still sell today. The conditioner bars were not great. They just didn't glide. They weren't rewarding. They felt like you were just sort of putting a rock on your hair, which I did know about going in. So it took me a year to nail the formula because I wanted it as natural as possible, which is so hard to do with a conditioner product. But I launched new conditioners last June. And I just think it's quite interesting that that's really when we scaled as well, because the conditioner was finally excellent. But the bars were already great. But there were things like I introduced a bar that had been a limited edition bar that's now one of our top sellers, which is for preventing thinning, but it wasn't part of the permanent range. So I brought that back. And then actually our huge growth phase that kicked off last year was with me formulating a purple toning shampoo for gray and blonde hair. And so I think with a lot of gray hair, you get yellowing in the end sometimes if it's like a really pure white gray. And then obviously if you've got blonde hair or highlights like mine, using a purple shampoo can kind of tone them. So I did introduce new bars and massively revamped the conditioner from scratch. But I do think the shampoo bars have always been great. So our existing customers from 2020 still shop with us. They're 26 orders deep on a subscription.
Excellent. And then one other question I just have to ask is, you bought the business and it was you going in full time with your husband partially involved as well. What does the team look like now? Because I think, you know, there's like, you've got to create the growth with the product and the marketing, but then if you screw up on team or ops or any of that element, you're done for. So how did you go about building the team with the right timings, the right job roles, all that element?
You're going to laugh. We don't have a team.
Wow.
I did it by myself is the answer to that. I don't recommend it. So that's not entirely true. For the first year, I didn't have anyone else. And then last year, I think it might have been around June, July, we found a phenomenal customer service virtual assistant. And she does 7 hours a week on customer service. So she relieved me of customer service, which was huge and absolutely changed our business and my life because she just does such a wonderful job at that. And then I think around mid last year as well, so basically the last 6 or 7 months I've had help and I've had 1 hour a day from another VA who just does sort of ad hoc e-com tasks. So just Shopify pages, Klaviyo, she's just a really wonderful doer. So I've had, I guess, you know, 11 to 12 hours a week of VA support. And then Lucas, my husband, has managed our P&L and forecasted stock. And I think one of the keys to our growth, which we were able to do fully bootstrapped without loans, is his phenomenal skill in forecasting stock and inventory. So he would be forecasting that wizardry down to the day that we needed to order. And so there's a whole ops piece that goes into growing what I would say too quickly, because it was too quick for comfort, that has to be in place. And I think I just got really lucky with the person I married.
And then this year, we're now looking to hire a marketing manager 15 hours a week, which would, be wonderful. But we've done it insanely lean. I have built teams in the past, large teams, and so I'm very excited to do that again now that we can. But yeah, we decided to go lean or go home.
That's amazing, Jamie. I mean, I love the fact you say both, we didn't hire a team, but I don't recommend it, in the same sentence. But my question to that would be, you must therefore have been super focused on what needed doing. And yes, you already had a great skill set, huge amount of experience for you, your husband able to really get that cash flow piece sorted. Manufacturing was already outsourced, so you had some of those time suck elements out. What would be your advice for making sure you're working on the right thing at the right time? Which, if you hadn't done that, you'd have imploded, exploded, or whatever else, both you and the business.
100%. I think the A to Z of growing any business, from like your fired sales to your 150 or whatever we just did, is you have to find your meta ads. Unless you're going to be a wholesale-based business and you're going to spend a year in an Excel sheet, calling small stores, you have to find your brand's unique product market fit with demographic, with the correct content on Meta. So whether that ends up sorting out on Meta or whether it ends up sorting on Instagram, I have heard of a couple of brands doing it very successfully on TikTok, if you're the right person and you know how to do that, leveraging affiliates and UGC. But you have to spend that whole time making your Meta ads work. And it was a real learning curve for me because I have bought my own ads as well. So I have created them, cut them, placed them, scaled them. And I didn't have an agency helping me do that. So it was a really tough time. And I'm not the maths guy. That's the other guy. And so it was brutal. But I think really, if brands don't spend the time early figuring out what's going to fly on Meta, there's a case to be made that you're actually not going to fly very easily, because if there's not that unique spark or ability to communicate your, the problem that you're solving or the unique benefit to someone's life that you're able to give them, and do that in a way that resonates with, the right talent and the fun copy or whatever it is, it's really difficult to grow in this day and age because so many brands do start on Meta. So I'm not saying there's no other way to grow, but I am saying if you're a really small brand, it's pretty likely that Meta is going to be where you get your first sales. And so I was just laser focused on our Meta ads and our email marketing, which is our second biggest channel. So I'm, again, lucky that I've had that sort of journalism, editing, publishing, copywriting background. So I love being in Klaviyo and writing EDMs. That's sort of my favorite thing to do. And so we had a really incredible return customer rate and just quite targeted sends going out a lot. And yeah, so I think I'm not a, anyone that's worked with me would say I'm not a structured individual. I am very opportunistic in terms of what the day throws at me, and I just make minute by minute decisions on what to focus on, which is so funny having come from a large structured team where everyone had their like tasks for the week and it was all run. Now I'm so loose that I'm kind of like, how will I run a team in a Notion again? But I think one of the good things about having all that time and it just being you is that you do get to sort of like sniff out, like truffle hunting, where's the gold today? Like, what's the thing? And I had a really sort of laser focus again on move the needle, which is such an overdone phrase, but I had that at the top of my own Notion board. And I said to Lucas at the end of every week, ask me at the end of every weekend, what did I do this week that could unlock super growth? Like, did I do a couple of things new or differently that could have been that step change for us? If not, I'm drowning in the weeds and I need to do something different. So I think it's just really making sure that you're always sniffing out what could be the thing that grows us. And I think for a lot of founders and certainly for a lot of sole operators, you can just drown in your inbox and never come out. And you look down and it's 6 p.m. and you haven't actually ticked off anything that could push your business forward that day. So I'd say embrace the opportunistic free time while you have it, because then, scaling from 1 to 5 mil, it's all about systems and people from there.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are.
Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500, yes, 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organize the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook.
It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our business to the next level. So, Jamie, are you ready for the top tips?
Very ready.
Okay, I would like that. Very ready. Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
I'm going to give you quite a rogue answer. There is a guy called Tim Duggan, D-U-G-G-A-N, and he's written a bunch of books that I love. I love everything he writes, but his newest one is called Work Backwards. And instead of it being about how you can improve your business, it's more about how you decide what role work plays in your life, and then you work backwards from it. And it's sort of like designing the lifestyle you want within your business. And I think it is such a incredible read that, you know, he has exercises in the middle and you have to force yourself to ask some really tough questions about what are you building and what's the legacy you're going to leave, but also what do you want your actual day-to-day to look like for the next 20, 50 years. So I would highly recommend that book. It was seminal for me last year.
Sounds rather refreshing to take it like a practical improve work-life balance rather than just improve work-life balance as a statement.
Yeah, his key thing in it is, you know, we're all on this treadmill of more, keeping up, running after the dollar, running after this valuation or this valuation. But actually, we've never decided what's the end goal. And then just work back from that. What's enough for you? And if you don't know you're enough, you'll just run ragged. And you don't even know what you're aiming for or why. It's just in the pursuit of more. So if you're always in the pursuit of more, you're going to burn out. But if you know what your enough is and you're working backwards, you can work out a sustainable business that really works for you. And, you know, that was actually probably one of the things philosophically that separates Lucas and I so much from others in business is that we've intentionally created lifestyle businesses that we want to be in. We're not about selling it. It's about creating a lifestyle for us. And I think, yeah, that book's a really great way to start.
I love that. Okay, traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
I think, again, Meta needs to be something you don't sleep on. It needs to be you figuring out how your brand operates in the Meta machine, because that is going to be the best way to drive traffic. I could give you some juicy SEO collections page tips because that would be my underutilized. But I think, yeah, Meta, again, if you're starting out or if you're scaling up, that's really going to be where the traffic comes from. And it's about finding your secret sauce on Meta that works.
Nice. Okay, tool top tip. Maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
Please don't fire me from this podcast for this next one, because I am going to mention ChatGPT. But it's a specific way that I use it that people I talk to don't. So I'm going to share that in case it changes your life. So what I do with ChatGPT is, my first tip is every time you open a new window, some of you guys might know this, but consider that a new robot to train from scratch. So every window is a new robot. The biggest mistake I see people making with chat is they just punch stuff in like Google. They don't give chat a role. So you are a marketing strategist with X years of experience, particularly scaling from this to this, you're going to get a really different answer to just putting something in cold. But what I do is I have a marketing expert I am obsessed with. His name is Nick Sharma, and he runs Sharma Brands in the US, and I love his podcast and everything he does. And so I said, "Hi, ChatGPT, you are Nick Sharma," entered Nick's website. "Please scrape his entire website, methodology, tips, and worksheets, and tell me how to solve these five scaling issues that I'm having. Where do I start?" and it gives you, in Nick's tone of voice, as if you got a free consulting session from Nick Sharma. And it's so amazing that anytime I'm stuck, I just go to my Nick Sharma on chat. And so I would just say, make chat in your own image. Anyone you want to befriend or have consult to you for free, chat can do that for you.
That is one super cool generative AI hack. So I love that. The skill of the prompt.
The skill of the prompt. Anyone that doesn't like chat, come find me and I'm going to tell you all about it. I have so many windows for different things. I mean, we lie and say I scaled this biz on my own because I had ChatGPT. I mean, these days, that's like, you know, a team of 10, really.
Love it. Okay, finally, the carbon top tip. And we failed to talk much about the sustainability side of your business, so I am so pleased we've got this in the top tips. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
I would say labor your packaging supply chain. Labor it. And I say labor it intentionally because it will be very painful when you're up at 1 a.m. Googling compostableplastictemperseals.com. And then your manufacturer has never heard of those and wants to give you plastic ones. And, you know, in summertime, your bar got too hot on the UPS truck. And so the purple shampoo leaked a little bit into the box. So they want you to line your boxes with plastic. But you don't want to do that. So labor your packaging supply chain and don't be lazy and use plastic when you can find a harder but more environmentally friendly option. And so I've worked really hard on with the rebrand with, you know, things like there's layers to it and there's so many layers that it can be exhausting, but, you know, non-plastic laminated outer shells, not laminating the inside, thinking about biodegradability in terms of your packaging and trying to be quite savvy with your 3PL if they're using, you know, non-biodegradable fake plastic satchels, lobby them to bring in a different supplier. We ship in only cardboard. So I think just be thoughtful about making it a project for yourself to really push how far you can get with your manufacturers and your 3PLs to eliminate plastic from your supply chain.
Yeah, it's a difficult team game, isn't it? If you really want to sort it.
Really, really tough. And you don't have to aim for perfect. You just have to aim for better all the time. That's all.
I like that. You don't have to aim for perfect, just better. Oh, very cool. Okay, Jamie, it has been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. For those who want to go and have a peek at what you're up to or get in touch and ask you questions, where can they find you and your business, please?
Sure. You can find us at Cookie Hair Care on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Pinterest. So COOKI Hair Care. And you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm always up for a chat.
Brilliant. Jamie, thank you so much for being on the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. It has been fascinating chatting with you and you've shared so much. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Chloe. It was great.
Well, wasn't Jamie fascinating and so knowledgeable? I thoroughly enjoyed that chat with her. Maybe we'll get her back on the show again. If you'd like to hear more about Jamie's story and what she's up to, let me know. What were my takeaways from that? I think the number one, which I was surprised, I'm surprised this is my number one. My number one takeaway was her final answer in the main part of the interview where she was saying about how she really focused in on getting the meta ads right. Partly in order to scale, but reading between the lines of what she said, I think seeing meta as a test bed for your marketing, you know, kind of if you can get the message and the audience right on meta, then you've got it right for everywhere else. So it's almost like a quick focus group in some ways. If that messaging is working on Meta, it will work in other places. It will bring you in the right customers. So I really loved that perspective on it. I found the fact she's done all this with, 10 hours of VA time a week and herself and then her husband's inventory forecasting, mad and super, super impressive. And then obviously she's only been able to do that by getting super focused. And for her, that's been the Meta ads, the email, the customer service, the product, knowing she had to get the conditioner right, knowing that she had to get the branding right. I think we all have a lot to learn from Jamie. So I thoroughly enjoyed chatting to her. I hope you got as much out of it as I did. I mean, my notes are insane for this one. So hopefully we'll get her back on the show again. You can get your hands on our notes from this episode, including those top tips and the links to the things we were talking about, by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. You can also use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/ the number of this episode, which this time is 531. So ecmp.info/531. That will take you straight to the correct page of the website. When you get there, why not add yourself to our email list so you don't miss anything we share to help you improve your e-commerce store? And what episode to recommend for you to listen to next? How about 524, not that long ago, which is about another beauty turnaround story. That's Wonderbrow, who went a bit mad on influencers and then worked out how to then build the growth platform in to make sure next time they went mad with influencers, it worked even better. You can also find all our beauty episodes by going to ecmp.info/beauty, where we've got a full list of them on the website. Thank you for tuning into this and every episode of the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help you to succeed and thrive with your business, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I hope you have a brilliant week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.
It's time to download our 500 top tips to make your e-commerce business more profitable ebook. Go to ecmp.info/ebook now.